from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in forums next hour, we continue our election coverage with debates on two of the propositions that will appear on the November 6th California ballot. In our first half hour, we take up Proposition 31, the Government Performance and Accountability Act, which would move California to a two-year budget cycle. It's designed to increase local control and improve rigorous oversight of state and local budgets. Then we proceed in our second half hour to Proposition 39, which, if approved, will close a tax loophole and require multi-state businesses presently getting tax breaks in California to calculate their California income tax liability based on the percentage of their sales within the state. Forum is next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this hour of our Forum program, which we are using to continue election coverage and talk about two propositions in the course of the hour. Supporters of Proposition 31 say the measure would provide badly needed reform and transparency to Sacramento. It would switch California to a two-year budget cycle, require performance reviews of state programs, and limit certain expenditures over $25 million. But critics say that Prop 31 is poorly drafted, will waste taxpayers' money, and create new layers of bureaucracy. Do you think that state government needs to be reformed? And, well, when you hear about this approach, does it sound like the right approach? We're going to continue in this hour, really, to debate Prop 31, and let me tell you who is here with us to do that. Jim Meyer is Executive Director of California Forward. They're a bipartisan public interest group. Their efforts are primarily geared toward bolstering democracy and improving the performance of government in California, and they're behind a lot of the research that led to Prop 31, most of it, in fact. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll say good morning also to Tom Adams, who's here with us in studio as well, Board Emeritus and former President of the Board of the California League of Conservation Voters. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So thank you both for being here, and let's talk about, we always begin with the proponent. So Jim Meyer, we're talking about presumably greater transparency and, more than that, more public review, citizen review.
Absolutely. California Forward started looking at the state budget process a number of years ago because it was clearly a broken process that the public had lost confidence in. It had resulted in structural budget deficits even in good years when revenue was growing. People weren't sure where the money was going, where the money was, whether it was doing any good. We stepped back. We looked at the various commissions and reports and studies that had been done. We talked with people in other states that had budget processes that seemed to be working, that were getting good independent reviews by think tanks like the Pew Center for the Study of the States. We pulled together a set of budget people who worked on budgets in California, and we crafted a comprehensive new budget process for the state of California. The legislature did hearings on this. They considered putting it on the ballot themselves, but they couldn't get past the partisan gridlock to put this on the ballot. And it really would kind of take this broken annual secretive system we've got and put in place best practices.
It's also former Supreme Court Justice Cruz Reynoso who said this is a critical first step out of the budget mess that we're in, the deficit that we're in.
Absolutely. And we kind of think about it in two ways. It's got some provisions in here that prevent the legislature from making the kinds of mistakes that got us into trouble. And one of them is a PAYGO provision, which Leon Panetta, when he was our first co-chair, had used very wisely in Washington as both chair of the Budget Committee and as OMB in the Clinton administration. And he said this is the right fiscal discipline. When you're going to make a decision whether to cut a tax or increase a program, you have to figure out how you finance it so you don't put the budget into red ink. It also has a 72-hour imprint rule. People constantly complain that the budget and other legislation gets changed at the last minute. Nobody knows what's in it, and they're asked to vote on it. So it would put in place a 72-hour imprint rule.
It also has performance reviews for all state programs, and many of those, and of course, we'll hear specifically what Tom Adams has to say. Many say that's too much red tape and too much unnecessary red tape at that.
You know, in addition to the rules to keep them from making bad decisions, then you have to create the information and the incentives for them to make good decisions. And this is clearly one of these things where the vast majority of well-functioning governments have moved to a performance approach. The federal government has done this. The state of Washington, the state of Virginia, governments like New Zealand and Canada that have figured out how to control their costs and improve educational outcomes, public safety. So it's a fairly simple measure, again, modeled after what's worked in other states. There's no bureaucracy at all involved here. We have state departments that are doing this. We have counties counties. We have cities that are doing this. It's simply identifying what you're trying to accomplish with programs and how you're going to measure it so that the budget discussion isn't about how much money you're getting, but how much good you're doing in California.
And again, Jim Meyer is Executive Director of California Forward. Tom Adams is Board Emeritus and former President of the Board of the California League of Conservation Voters. Two big objections that I seem to keep coming across in my reading about Prop 31 have to do with the power it gives the governor and the concern over regulatory performance.
Thank you. I think that those are two of the major concerns. I think that some of the stuff that's in this has been widely talked about, to your budgets, rules about bills in print, PAYGO. But some of the provisions of this are being daylighted for the first time in this ballot measure, and they would, you know, want to stick them in the Constitution where it would be extremely difficult to change them. One of them authorizes local governments to adopt what are called strategic action plans, which may or may not be a good idea, but a provision of this bill would give local governments the authority to override state law. In particular, it would give local governments the authority to override state environmental laws, but it would also give them the authority to override state laws dealing with social services and a wide variety of other things. For example, on environmental laws, the Coastal Commission is opposed to Proposition 31 because local governments within the coastal zone could override the protections of the Coastal Act. But the provisions are much broader than that. It would allow local governments to override provisions of the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act, even AB 32. And California, I don't think, wants to have pockets of counties around the state where there's environmental degradation and threats to public health. We already have parts of the state of California where asthma conditions because of poor air quality are at record levels in the United States. These are intolerable conditions, and Proposition 31 would allow local governments to let air quality and water quality worsen. The other thing I think that people talk about a lot is we have in California, as in most of the United States, a system of checks and balances. There's the legislative, the judicial, and the executive branches. Proposition 31 would fundamentally shift the balance of power in Sacramento and give the governor unilateral authority to cut the budget under, if any time that—
Vital emergencies, I think, is the wording.
Well, yes, they say fiscal emergencies, but that's a vaguely defined term, and a governor could declare a fiscal emergency over a wide variety of circumstances and then exercise his or her power to unilaterally cut the budget. The budget has always been a process where there's been collaboration between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and this would fundamentally shift power to the governor in a way that I think upsets the checks and balances in the California Constitution.
Take those two points, if you would, Jim Meyer. I mean, the concern about gubernatorial power, balance of powers that we've just heard Tom Adams outline, and also the concern about local trumping state and doing away with, well, important environmental laws.
You know, I think Tom overstates both of those, and let me be very specific. The California Constitution already sets up a process for the governor to declare a fiscal emergency and a process for the legislature to respond to that emergency. This adds one simple provision to that that says if the legislature fails to take any action whatsoever in response to a fiscal emergency, then the governor can take certain actions to reduce spending to bring the budget back into balance.
And those actions are specified?
What it has to be is statutory as opposed to constitutional. So you can't, and there's a fair amount of the spending that is defined by the Constitution, and so this doesn't allow him to do that. This is actually a power that governors had in California for the better part of the 20th century, and those were the golden years. So it's hard to see how this fundamentally changes the checks and balances. And again, the only time the governor would have this ability is if the legislature fails to take any action in response to an emergency.
Memory serves me, this is something that Governor Schwarzenegger wanted very badly.
He wanted something. His was much different. What he wanted was if the legislature acted, he wanted the ability to veto the legislature's decision and do whatever he wants. And that's not what this measure says. This measure says if the legislature takes any action, say there's a $1 billion budget gap and the legislature says, look, we want to solve $500 million of it. This measure is very clear that constitutes a legislative action and the governor doesn't have any additional authority.
And the concern over the dispensing of environmental laws?
Yeah. So let's talk about that. First, to step back and say why we are doing this. And this was developed over a course of a year in consultation consultation with lots of people, particularly those in local governments who are being asked to do much more with much less. And when you talk to them about both what has worked and what do they need, they look back on about 25 years of legislatively established pilot projects throughout the state where cities, counties, and schools were given specific incentives to work together. Because if you're trying to, say, reduce youth crime and violence, that's not something the schools can do without the cooperation of county probation and the city police department. So we have a long history of collaborative governments, including ones where they were given flexibility in how they spent state resources. The problem is, Michael, we've never had a chance to make this more than a pilot project. And so when we talked with county and city and school folks and we said, given the austere fiscal times and given the demands on your programs, in addition to money, which some people are working on, what more could you give? And they say, we need incentives to work together and we need some flexibility in how we apply state law. This doesn't allow anybody to override anything. This does allow a county and cities and schools to propose a community rule, which by the provisions of the measure have to achieve or exceed the state objective.
These are these action plans?
Yeah, that's right.
And we should mention the amount. It's $200 million that would go to the local.
So there's two parts to it. One of them is what are the incentives they get? And one of them is, look, if you actually think there is a state regulation that prevents you from achieving a statewide objective, and that's how the measure is worded, you can propose a community rule. And the legislature, if they don't like it, or an administrative agency can veto that. So it's really them proposing a community rule and the state being able to stop anything that they think is an overreach. In addition to that, when the state shifted to counties earlier this year some responsibilities over public safety and child welfare, they actually didn't give local governments all the money that the state is going to save. So this takes a portion of that additional savings and it creates a trust fund. It's an innovation fund. And this says if county, cities, and schools figure out how to do this, they get some additional money to do it.
Any problems with that, Tom Adams?
Well, I think, yes, I think that Jim is not accurately describing the measure. The measure allows a local government to override a state statute that would impair or impede a local strategic plan. And the only check on that is that they have to submit it to the legislature. And if the legislature fails to act on it within 60 days, it's the override of the state laws is deemed approved. There's no judicial review of that. The legislature is established as a deliberative body. It's not designed to make decisions quickly. And asking the legislature, both houses of the legislature, to do something within 60 days is asking for something that's simply not going to happen. So what this is going to do is going to create local governments that, you know, there are many local governments in the state of California that resist the state's environmental laws and resist the protections of public health. The whole reason the Coastal Act was passed was because local governments were not taking action to protect the coast. The reason that the state has passed the Clean Water Act is because local governments were having drinking water plants that were not protecting the public health because they were trying to save money in the building of those plants. The reason that we have protections from power plants, including power plants that are owned by local governments, is because the air emissions from those power plants are poisoning neighborhoods. We need state standards to protect our communities from these kind of violations, and Proposition 31 would authorize local governments to override these state laws.
Let me bring our listeners into this. This is only a half-hour segment, but we're devoting concern and time to it, and also the opportunity for you to join in here and join the conversation with any questions or comments you might have about Prop 31. Our toll-free number available now, it's 866-733-6786, so feel free to join us. Again, we welcome your calls. 866-733-6786. Other ways to communicate with us now, email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any of your questions or comments on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. Talking with Tom Adams from the board of the California League of Conservation Voters and with Jim Myers, Mayor, who is Executive Director of California Forward. And again, our toll-free number available now is 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Talking again about Prop 31, proponents saying, well, the measure would provide badly needed reform and transparency in Sacramento and would switch, we should mention and highlight this, California to a 2-year budget cycle, which proponents also say will keep this sort of last-minute things done in the dark away from happening. But it will also require performance reviews of state programs, and it will limit certain expenditures over $25 million. And the critics say it's badly drafted, waste taxpayers' money, create new layers of bureaucracy. We ask for you to join us. Matthew writes, the tax initiative is theft at municipal level and will crush California receipts. It's born of ambivalence about market economics, as Obama's pathetic debate performance was. He could not just stand up and point to a graph showing the Dow doubled under his watch because he doesn't value it. And California clearly doesn't value its entrepreneurial genius that creates all those multi-state businesses. Well, this is about Prop 39. We'll get there, by the way, in the next segment. Bob from the website writes, as a state worker, I'd be interested in this. I'm interested in this. Given the legislature and governor deliberately not generating accurate budgets for even a few months, why would a two-year budget help? And performance reviews, please. Any state worker with a couple years' experience knows how to justify their project. Agencies will just waste more staff time to justify themselves periodically. You say what to that, Jim Meyer?
Well, the most important part of a two-year budget is it allows you to anticipate what your costs are really going to be so that you can start to hold those down. States and even local governments that have multi-year budgets, it's really about trying to figure out how to control your costs. And you should know that in government we have incredible inflation pressures. If revenue doesn't grow by 3 and 4 and 5% every year, we're operating in the red. And again, there are lots and lots of examples, including state agencies, including the Department of Motor Vehicles, which voluntarily did some performance metrics during the Schwarzenegger years around very tangible things like wait times so that the public wouldn't be having to wait in line. And those all proved to be very beneficial. We have a number of environmental-related agencies that have performance metrics, including how to cost-effectively and protect the environment from toxic substances. All of these have been internal voluntary efforts by state agencies that have figured out how to hold down costs and improve public benefit.
Tom Adams, rejoinder from you.
Thank you, Michael. The two-year budget is something that sounds good, I suppose, to a lot of people, but it's completely unrealistic. In California, because we don't have a high percentage of our revenue from property taxes, our budget is subject to a great deal of volatility, depending in large measure on whether or not there are capital gains receipts from wealthy individuals. So the governor submits a budget in January, and under the current procedures, they do a revision of it in May. And oftentimes, the revision in May is very dramatic, a couple of billion or a few billion dollars just between January and May. And the legislature always waits until it gets the May revise to do the budget because the January figures, even though the Department of Finance tries its best to give good figures, they're out of date in 5 months. The idea that we could do a two-year budget, given the volatile state of our economy and the expectation of receipts in California, is completely unrealistic.
We'll go to our first caller here for this segment, and that's you, Kim. Hi.
Doing? Thank you for the program. I haven't read this proposition yet fully, but I did have a question. Up here in Nevada, we're getting high-density, low-income housing kind of shoved up our potato, if you know what I mean, and we're kind of a resentful group because we're tired of being the dumping ground in Marin for high-density, low-income housing just because we're kind of country up here. And they want to change the nature of our town. And I may vote for this if it gives us local control. We're very interested in having local control on this issue.
Tom Adams, do you see this as offering local control in the way that the caller has described?
I'm not sure what state laws she's referring to. I mean, I think that a lot of these local planning decisions are already essentially local decisions, and I'm not sure what she's referring to. I think that what the measure does is it gives local governments the authority to override state statutes that may impair or impede progress towards strategic action plans. And I can't speak to the housing situation, but I'm sure that the people in Nevada care about clean water, care about clean air, and care about protecting species that are in the rural areas around them. And I don't think that they would want the communities around them to be able to override statutes that provide those protections.
Jim Mayer. So
what the measure allows is for counties, cities, and schools, if they all agree to propose a community rule, which is how they would achieve a state objective, as opposed to what Tom characterizes as overriding. Where we see most of this happening, and this is happening already in the state, this is about trying to accelerate progress. It's where counties, cities, and schools have an overlapping mission, and it usually is around youth and families. It's about how are we going to figure out to get more kids to graduate from school, stay out of trouble, stay out of the foster care system. That's where there's a commonality there. It's where when they pool their resources, they can get more done. And it's where a few more dollars would have dramatic impact on the quality of life in our communities.
Let me go to an email from a listener named Robert who says, although a two-year budget cycle may appear to offer some fiscal stability to the process, I would suggest that in a political world where a third minority can hold up the process, the effect of Prop 31 will be to lock in the will of the minority, like Prop 13, same numbers, reversed. What looks like a good idea will have lasting and painful unanticipated consequences. It seems that the proposition process is often turned on its head by clever wording that makes the proposition appear to be something different than it actually is. It might be helpful if all the propositions had to be stated in clear and unambiguous wording, and it might be worth having a formal review to certify wording. Well, this actually has, I think this has about 80,000 words in it. It's a complicated proposition because it came out of all this California forward work. But let's go right to the heart of the email here. What Robert suggests is that you could have a minority holding up a majority.
You got to remember, because of Prop 25 2 years ago, a simple majority vote by the legislature takes any action on the budget. So essentially, the minority party at this point has no role in forming the budget. So that part of the issue is just not true anymore. The part of isn't that we're going to get 2 years worth of revenue right. It's that the legislature isn't going to be spending 6 months of the year trying to figure out how to spend a budget when it's out of balance the second they pass it. So it's about the legislature better managing their time, taking a focus on how to control costs. The other thing we haven't mentioned here is that this would require for the first time that the legislature actually look at every program to see whether it's working or not. And again, this is a very simple practice, but in other states has had dramatic impact. When the state of Washington used performance data to look across the portfolio of criminal justice programs they had, they discovered some weren't working and some were. So they shifted the money to the ones that they're working. And by their analysis now, because they were doing performance oversight, they've prevented the need to build a prison.
Tom Adams?
I think there's a commenter is focusing on really a deeper point here, and that is that there is 80,000 words in this ballot measure, and most of them would go into the Constitution. And most of them have really not been subject to public review, and a lot of them are very badly drafted. The PAYGO provisions, for example, create incentives for California to go deeper into debt. They would prevent California from being able to get federal matching grants. There's drafting issues throughout this measure that are going to be problems. There's going to be litigation for years as a result of this with, I think, consequences that are unforeseen and unforeseeable. A measure that's this complex and this long should not be added to the Constitution. And I think the voter is right to be skeptical of this type of effort.
Well, now it rests with the voters. And this has been a good and enlightening debate. I appreciate both of you being with us. And thank you. Jim Mayer, again, is Executive Director of California Forward. They're a bipartisan public interest effort dedicated to bolstering democracy and improving the performance of government in California. Tom Adams is Board Emeritus and former President of the Board of the California League of Conservation Voters. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And we have actually another proposition on deck here. We're going to talk about Prop 39 in the segment coming up. So stay tuned. Stay right where you are. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.